This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
iFanboy Pick of the Week Podcast, episode 22. Hi, and welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast. This is episode 22. iFanboy is a website where we talk about comics and what's going on in the world of comics, which makes sense. Every week, one of us will read a stack of comics and write a review on what they thought is the best pick of the week, and then we get together for this here podcast and yap about it. So this week, I'm Josh, and I'm here with Ron.
Hello.
And Connor, who did the pick of the week, and you can take it away.
Okay, well, this week, my pick was Superman 650, which was formerly known as The Adventures of Superman. So they changed the title, but they didn't renumber it. It's kind of a weird thing they did.
It's a good title change.
Yeah. Well, I mean, go ahead.
Did Adventures of Superman go 650 issues?
Yes, they just dropped the Adventures part. It's just named Superman. Okay. They got rid of the other book called Superman. So it was kind of confusing for about four or five seconds.
What number would that be on?
If it was just regular Superman?
Yeah.
It's been
a long time.
Yeah, it was in the 200s, I want to say, or the 100s.
Oh, that's it? So this would be the long-running one, 650, I guess.
Well, Action Comics would be the long-running one. That's the one in the 800s. But, I mean, this is the second longest-running book, Superman book. So just confusing. They dropped...
That's 54 years worth of monthly issues.
Yeah. Feels like it.
My calculations tell me.
Anyway, I love Superman as a character, but I'm not an obsessive Superman reader. Like, I will drop the book if it gets bad and not.
I will drop that book.
I'll drop it right then. But the problem is, I keep picking it back up.
You're just like a meth addict.
Yeah. Every time they put somebody new on it, I keep thinking this is going to be the great run, and I buy it, and then it doesn't go well. But with this 1 year later reboot, it's got Kurt Busiek and Jeff Johns on the writing. And so I picked it up again because
that ain't bad.
It's not bad. It's not a bad crew. They're co-writing this first storyline, which is taking place over the two books, which people don't like. I don't necessarily hate because I'd buy them anyway, but I can see how people wouldn't like having to pick up both books. But then after this storyline is over, they're going to split up and each write a book. And as a one of the things I really like in any entertainment is mystery. I like mysteries. I like watching mysteries. I like reading mysteries, crime novels, things like that. And one of the great things about the 1 year later event is that it's all basically one big mystery. It's what happened in this 1 year time span to make all these changes happen. And I like trying to figure things out and pick up the clues. And that's one of the things I didn't expect to happen. But now that I'm really excited about reading all of these books. I don't know if you guys are reading many of these at all.
I actually did pick this one book up, just because I looked the cover and I thought, oh, that's good. And I like Pete Woods' work, and I know that, you know, Jeff.
It's a really striking cover.
I did not.
Yeah, it's
are you reading
cover.
Any of them?
I got Green Arrow because for some reason I just think that I want to keep reading it. Cause I dropped it before, like 3 or 4 issues ago, because it was getting bad.
Mm-hmm.
But this whole, you know, Alia's Mayor thing has me intrigued, so I thought I'd pick it up. So.
I picked it up. I liked it, but you know, I don't have that same mystery thing because I don't really know what was happening anyway. So all I do know that, you know, he's not Superman now.
Well, he doesn't have his power. Supergirl is the one who...
Whoa.
What?
He's not Superman?
Well, it's revealed.
I'm completely not paying attention to anything in DC, so...
Did you even read my Pick of the Week review?
No, I did not.
There you go.
I'm not prepared.
Something happened in the year... That he does, Clark doesn't have his powers anymore, and Supergirl's the one who patrols Metropolis now.
Oh, how emasculating!
Right. Well, he seems to be enjoying it.
So he has no powers.
Well, Lex Luthor beats his ass at the end of the issue.
Really?
Yeah.
Like in a street fight?
Well, his dogs hold him, and Lex beats him down. He's bleeding from the mouth.
While
and
he
cracks
lectures
his rib.
Him about how he's badass.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
But he's like the offside of that is while he's not He's not Superman anymore. He's becoming like the greatest reporter that ever walked, and they're like thinking
nice.
Pulitzer, and so like he's becoming really good. And Perry White loves him because he's focused on his work finally.
So this is like the spider armor. This isn't going to stick around.
Well, obviously not. But I mean,
just checking.
And the other, you know, there are some intriguing clues that are dropped in this issue. One of the gimmicks for the Daily Planet has always been they've had those quote unquote famous front pages that they've got in frames on their walls, and some of these are pointing towards things that are probably will be happening that had happened in the past. For instance, one of the covers says, "Who is Batwoman?"
Right.
Another one says, "Supernova sighted again."
Supernova.
And who knows what that means? That's not the Nova you love, which we'll talk about later.
Nova. Sorry.
But I mean, this is not just happening in this book, but this is the best.
The other clue that I thought was really interesting that I think someone on the website pointed out I noticed when I was reading it was the very beginning of he's in the park or something watching a movie. I don't really know how that makes sense, but there's a Superman feature film, and it shows like Superman's last great adventures, and it's him beating on Doomsday, which doesn't really seem to go with
weird.
Yeah, that was weird, and I don't know how that's going to go, if that was just a mistake or what, but...
So do you at any point did Clark go to like a sketchy diner?
No.
He still could.
Well,
and then the thing is that Geoff Johns is very...
I love that scene, by the way. That's my those two scenes are my favorite in that diner. That's
when he spins
make
around
that,
in the chair.
Yes. Those make that movie so well. Oh man, I love it. Anyway, sorry, go on.
Threw me completely off.
Rhythm be damned.
I will say that I normally really, really like Pete Woods, but this is a slightly different style than he usually uses, and I don't like it as much as his old style.
You just like Robin.
I do like Robin.
You miss,
but
you
I mean, this
Robin.
Is this is slightly less cartoony, like the, but it's good. I just didn't like it as much. I don't know why Clark is wearing fedora with his Letterman's jacket.
That was, by the way, your big Chuck Klosterman funny line of the week.
Thank you. I was like, what? I mean, he's wearing like a, you know, his school's jacket, Letterman jacket, and a fedora through the entire issue.
It's like a rumpled fedora, though. Elvis Costello can pull it off, so I think he can.
Well, it's not like a, that'd be like a pork pipe hat, or whatever they call those things.
Yeah. Basically, though, the idea here is that, you know, he's not being Superman right now. Everybody's taking care of it, and life is pretty sweet for him.
Yeah, he's happy.
He's damn happy.
He's got
Although
he's
Jimmy
time with
Olsen,
Lois. Yeah.
Jimmy Olsen's very sad.
He misses Superman.
He does.
But
he misses his pal.
He spends time with Lois. He gets to actually be a reporter. He doesn't have to worry about going off and saving everyone, which is sort of out of character because the whole idea of Superman is that he feels the obligation to help everyone.
But he doesn't have the great power anymore, so there's no responsibility.
Right, but...
Oh.
You can't... That's copyright of a different company, my friend. Don't...
Right, yeah. Trademark, Marvel Entertainment.
So we'll see. I mean, this is a jumping on. This is the first issue with a jumping on point. We'll see what happens. But I thought this was the best of the issues. This was a week where there's a lot of like B+ comics. Nothing. There weren't any A's.
Mm-hmm.
So it was. I think it was the best of my B+ lot.
Have you jumped on?
Jumped on.
I mean, like, are you gonna stick with the book?
Oh,
now,
sure. I'm gonna. I mean, yeah. I'm gonna
give. Starts to suck.
Sure, and then I'll drop it. I mean, I've done it with every almost reboot of it. I keep trying and nothing. Green Arrow was okay. I mean, it was good, but it wasn't great. Birds of Prey, I thought, was the weakest one of the 1 year later books. I can't believe
that's still around, by the way.
It's very popular. It's issue 92.
No, I know that, but when it first came out, I thought, that's no way that lives for a long time.
He's getting into trouble.
I think
why wouldn't it live?
Chicks.
Because
here we go.
If you look at our flapper map,
Toga's gonna fly to California and punch you.
No. I'm talking about the audience. I think that the audience is mostly males, and they're mostly interested in themselves because it's a narcissistic audience.
Well,
so
I think what
that's
it was.
That's why Wonder Woman keeps not succeeding over and over and over again. Like they're novelties for a little while, and people like them when they're good.
Well, but... I can tell you why. One of the main reasons why is because. Chuck Dixon, when he was basically writing the entire Batman universe,
mm-hmm. Single-handedly,
he pretty much was,
and he was great at it.
He wrote Robin, Nightwing, Birds of Prey, and one of the Batman books, mm-hmm. and he wove such a compelling universe full of compelling characters, and he grounded them in really well-rounded characterizations that it was hard not to like. He did a great job on Birds of Prey.
Yeah,
he did the same thing for Nightwing because. Nightwing never really succeeded in the past as a solo character, solo book or character, but his Nightwing is really compelling. The same thing with Robin. So I think it's all due to him. I think that some of the writers subsequent to Chuck Dixon have done their level best to really destroy what he did. But
is he back? I mean, because I know he went to CrossGen for a while. What happened to him?
I'm not sure what he's doing now. I haven't seen his name, but.
I do remember those were all very good books, and he Nightwing, for some reason, knew what he was doing with that stuff.
He was really tuned into that universe. Nightwing was also sort of okay. The big thing
is he Batman?
No, Nightwing. This was discussed on the website. Somebody was saying that they knew all of the. I wrote in my review how I was really enjoying finding out all the twists and turns, and someone else wrote that they had known everything going in, and I had pointedly. Avoided spoilers as best I could for these things, so I didn't know that there were going to be two Nightwings.
There are two Nightwings.
So now anybody else who is avoiding spoilers,
well, it's too late now. The book's out.
Yeah, that's true.
It opens up with Nightwing stopping a crime, then he takes a knife and slashes the throat of the criminal.
Oh my god, like, that's not Dick.
And you're like, whoa, Dick got really angry in the last year, and then
didn't
who is
they
it?
Do this? Wasn't there? God, that sounds really familiar.
And then you end up finding out that it's not Dick, it's Jason Todd, and also Dick. They're both going around just as Nightwing.
Oh, so Jason Todd is just being a punk.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, that punk.
And then at the end,
he is a punk. He's a tire-stealing punk.
Yeah.
And then at the end, they...
Lepers don't change their spots.
They're confronted with each other. The way you can tell them apart is that Dick's... Really
this is Ron's
hair.
Conservative social values coming out. A bad egg's a bad egg.
I will agree with him in this sense. Jason Todd is a jerk.
We voted him to be dead. He should still be dead.
No, respect.
I think it's hilarious that the Batmobile didn't have locking lug nuts. I mean, you couldn't steal the tires off my Volkswagen, but the Batmobile, it was okay. He could do that. It doesn't make any damn sense.
Listen,
sorry.
That's how he became Robin. He was that ingenious.
Okay, that's a good point.
I do have to say I'm ashamed of myself for buying Infinite Crisis Secret Files and Origins.
I've got a fantastic bridge that's near your house, Connor, that you can get as well.
$6!
Oh, my God.
That's lunch.
I was going to buy it, and I saw Howard Chaykin's name, and I said, okay.
Wow, impressive.
He drew one page.
one pinup, right?
Yes, a pinup of Lois Lane.
I remember back in college, I bought more DC Secret Files, I think, than I bought DC Series.
Ugh.
Like, for some reason, I was like, ooh, Secret Files. And I was just like...
I hate it when I'm not paying attention and I buy it because I think it's a regular issue.
Yeah.
Yeah, sucker.
Oh, that's the biggest... I think I bought a Hellblazer Secret Files once on accident. I was like,
$6.
$6, you'll never get back.
It was awful. It was completely useless, a waste of time. Because a lot of times... Well, on occasion, the Secret Files will add something of substance to the texture of the story, but this is just useless.
This is just greed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I feel ashamed.
Well, let's check on eBay. Let's see what's going for.
I feel dirty.
$6. There's 3 bids for one with a shipping of $350. Nice. You could sell it. This one says no. It says Infinite Crisis Secret Files. 3 bids is $6 with shipping for $350 near mint. You could sell yours. Get that $6 back. Do it. Scan
terrible.
It in. Put it up there.
Ashamed. You should feel ashamed.
I might just light it on fire.
That's awesome.
It's cold out.
Well, this week, you know, like I said, I didn't pick up the Superman, but I agree with you. It was like a B-plus week.
Will you pick up Superman?
No.
No.
Why?
Because I don't.
You like Smallville?
I like Smallville, but I don't have the money, I don't have the time, I don't have the inclination, I don't have a real emotional attachment to him. I've never really cared for Superman. Not that I recognize him as the icon that he is.
I at the movies last night, I saw the teaser for the Superman movie, and I got the chills again. I was like, and
yeah,
I thought to myself,
movie.
Well, I thought to myself, it's amazing to me that we are almost 70 years down the road,
and he's still.
And it's still a vital character. That's amazing. I can't think of anything else.
It is impressive, but the thing is that, I mean, we talked about it in previous podcasts. It's hard enough being an X-Men fan. You know, I can't do both. So, no Batman, no Superman. Drawing a line.
Okay.
Line in the sand.
So what did you get?
So I did get, you know, I got a bunch of, you know, Ultimate X-Men and Ultimate Extinction and blah, 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 and DMZ and Spider-Woman Origin. But
he's got room for that.
The books...
Ultimate X-Men was good.
Ultimate X-Men was good, but whatever.
I wasn't talking about that one.
Yeah. Anyway, the two books that stood out for me this week were first those the prologue to the Annihilation event in Marvel, which is Keith Giffen's big cosmic opus for Marvel that will be going through the next 6 months. Have you noticed that Keith Giffen is just everywhere?
No.
He is.
Yeah, I have.
He's behind this Annihilation thing, which is going until January 2007. He's doing all the breakdowns for the 52, the DC Weekly series.
Oh, he is?
Yeah, he is. Like, he's doing like, the huge events for both companies. It's really, you know, really kind of bizarre.
But he, so. And he was gone for, like, 50
yeah.
years.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
What was he doing during that time?
But,
building up debt.
but the Annihilation prologue was really good. It was like I remember a couple of weeks or months ago I was kind of tentative towards this series because I was like, oh, they're gonna mess with Nova and I've always been on the fence with the Marvel cosmic characters. Like I love it when Jim Starlin did it and I love the whole cosmic characters, but sometimes when other people did it was just awful. So
who is this going to involve?
Well, the main people appear to be the Silver Surfer, the Super Skrull, Nova, Ronan the Accuser, and Drax the Destroyer.
Wow, this is gonna sell like hotcakes.
Well, you don't know. I mean, I think there could be people who, you know, Silver Surfer's always had a strong, you know, a strong crowd, and then of course there is Nova.
When are they gonna bring in Marvel's Michael Jackson, otherwise known as the Beyonder?
Oh no, I don't think so. I think also Thanos is in this as well. Of course,
you can't do it without
exactly
Thanos.
Without Thanos. And I think the whole plot, the villain is Annihilus. You know, the Fantastic Four guy, because Annihilation, and he's at the very end of this. You see him. So, but it was just great. I mean, it was a fun read. It went, you know, like it's a prologue, and what they're doing is they're doing a prologue. And kind of giving you a taste of all the characters, and then they're doing a miniseries, the four miniseries around Nova, Super Skrull, Ronan, and Silver Surfer, and then that will end in August, and that leads into the Annihilation book that will go until January 2007. But this has got me psyched for it. I mean, and it kind of stoked the flame of the Nova fan club that I have been a lifetime member of.
You know what? That doesn't take much stoking.
It doesn't take much stoking at all. Although, and it's funny because I was just looking at the Pick of the Week thread. Not reading the review, of course, but just reading the thread. And Michael brought up the question asking, you know, the relation between, or the similarity between basically the Nova Corps and the Green Lantern Corps. And which is funny because I had the same thought as I was reading this, because Nova, you know, for those who don't know, Nova is, you know, been a character from the 70s in Marvel, and he's a guy who gets these, who gets the, this costume and these powers and joins the Nova Corps in space.
It's a band,
it's actually,
right?
It's actually the Corps, you know.
The Corps, yeah. I say corpse, right? Yeah. But the Nova Corps, and they're like basically like cosmic policemen.
They're bands, right? He gets the power bands.
No, no, that's Quasar and Captain Marvel.
What? Do right. Little Green, do Little Blue Men direct the Nova Corps?
Actually, yeah, I think they do. I don't think he's little. Wait, let me turn the page. There's a scene where like the head of the Nova Corps is talking to them, and I believe he. Oh no, he's purple. He's purple.
Oh, that's all difference.
But yeah, but
it's fine then.
It was funny because Scott Collins did the art, and there's one page which is, I don't know if you know, was done on purpose or by accident, but it's basically pause any scene in the Imperial Senate in any of the Star Wars prequels, mm-hmm. and that's basically what Scott Collins drew. The head of the Nova Corps is on this floating platform, and there are two people sitting behind him, and there's this big, you know, kind of round room with all the Nova Corps, you know, cops basically being briefed, and it's exactly straight out of Star Wars. It's actually kind of funny.
Wow, that is just a huge Green Lantern ripoff.
Yeah, it's. A
I had
bit
no
of,
idea.
Yeah, no, it's a little bit of a, it is a little bit of a Green Lantern ripoff, but it's good. A
little bit.
A little bit.
I had no idea. I thought he was just some dude.
No. There's a whole and he keeps and he's getting like made fun of by the other corpsmen for being a rookie and then there's a chick who he kind of befriends and then she.
Does she get hacked up and put in a refrigerator?
No, she doesn't. She dies in the battle and.
Is there like a fish guy with a beak?
No, there's no and there's no Kilowog or any other town enough.
The guy with a bowl cut?
No, but. But it is funny because Nova's signature thing is his helmet, is the bucket that he wears on his head with the red starburst. And the one thing I noticed is that all the other Nova Corpsmen have, you know, kind of variations on their costume. You know, they all basically have the same yellow and blue, that classic costume with the three starbursts and then the red thing on the front. But they all seem to have helmets that kind of enclose over their face with like a blue shield that to supposedly allow them to breathe in space and all that. Mm-hmm. But Nova's is his mouth is just open to the elements, and they show him flying in space, and I don't know how he breathes. But
well, he asks the ring automatically generate. Wait,
no, no ring.
Oh, wait,
no ring.
Sorry.
Yeah,
sorry.
Yeah. But anyway, but Annihilation's gonna be fun. So I was glad to see Nova.
Are you looking forward to Annihilation as much as you're looking forward to Civil War or Planet Hulk or what's the other one?
Planet Hulk, I don't care about, and Civil War. I'll probably say Civil War, and then Annihilation. Annihilation is like a.
Isn't there an X-Men one?
Civil War.
No. According to them, the X-Men aren't really all that involved in Civil War.
Oh, interesting.
They could care
less. They're off plan or something. I mean, some of the X-Men are there, but it's most. They're not like.
Yeah, who knows?
It's mostly an Avengers thing.
You know, I'll be honest with you. I can't keep track.
I can't at all.
I buy them as I see them.
Interesting.
But so yeah, so Annihilation was fun. So it was, and it was good to see Nova back. Nova, 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 Nova. I can't say Nova enough.
You like Nova more than Darkhawk?
Tough pick. I would have to say yes, only because there's more Nova than Darkhawk out there.
Like, he's gotten a couple of his own series.
Yeah, and he was in New Warriors and all this kind of stuff. Well, Darkhawk had that one series, and then he's had a handful of appearances.
That is literally the only reason why I don't know Nova is from New Warriors.
Yeah, no, and that's how I was introduced to him, but the difference being that I went back to find out about him, and you didn't, so. I mean, okay. It's funny because the article I posted, the column I posted about from Eric Larson about his love for Nova is interesting because there really is almost like kind of two groups of Nova people. It's like the people who knew about Nova in the 70s and 80s, and then the people who found out about Nova from New Warriors. And it's just interesting to see, like, and the reason why Larson's kind of back to basic take on Nova back in the late 90s didn't work was because the New Warriors folks just didn't get it, didn't like it, you know? So
they don't know.
I read that book. I liked it.
Yeah, I loved it.
I hadn't read either of them.
Yeah. So Nova's good. It's. I mean, the thing is that it is the same premise as Darkhawk, same premise as Kyle Rayner's Green Lantern, same premise as, you know.
The greatest American hero?
Yeah, exactly. So, believe it or not, it's just him.
Did you read The Runaways this week?
I did read The Runaways with an extra special attention after our recent discussion about Runaways sucking.
Did it suck?
No, I think this could be this. It's the beginning of a new arc, but I'm intrigued. Did you get it?
I did. I was really interested. I thought it was a really cool. One of the things that Vaughn does in this book specifically, is that he'll take some pop culture thing, and use it in his story, and in a way. I think Bendis has done it a couple of times, but he does it more convincingly. But what's interesting
Better than the Ms. Marvel blog?
Yes.
Yeah.
I was actually thinking more of the role-playing stuff in Powers. But
and less about the – oh, yeah, the role-playing stuff. Yeah, I know what you mean. Okay.
But basically what I'm saying is a lot of times if you're reading a comic book and the writer tries to pull in something from the outside world, it's often very forced and cheesy.
Or glaring, yeah, very glaring.
And so basically the story in this is that Alex, who was the turncoat from the first series of The Runaways, was apparently in a guild in an online role-playing game where they would play Marvel characters. Which, by the way, would be a great game if they could come up with it.
Yeah, look, the game looked awesome.
I know,
because it looked kind of like you know, like World of Warcraft. Even
wait,
it also looked kind of
from
like
the first issue of Runaways.
Yeah, exactly.
The very first scene.
Yeah, there's a flash. It's 18 months ago flashback. So, but the game looks like more action oriented. It was like he's playing with an Xbox controller. So it's like,
I think that part was sort of a slip up of the artist. Is my guess. Because it's a computer game, and you wouldn't play that kind of game with a. Anyway,
way to shit on Adrian Alfana.
Oh, well, there you go.
He's gonna like it. Nice.
He's not a gamer. That's all.
Adrian, we have your number. All right, go on.
We don't.
No, we don't. No.
But anyways, the story is that he's had got a guild, and he was the leader of this guild, and they don't really know each other, and they decided to all get together one time, and Alex couldn't go, and they didn't believe that he was a teenager, and then he disappears, and it's been a year and a half. And he left a clue on his computer that he knew would be hacked into by his guild members about how to resurrect him.
What?
And these people...
Well, they find out he was part of the Pride and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. It's much more... And basically, like, the one conspiracy theorist in a Wonder Man shirt, I might add.
which was the best... I want that shirt. That was fantastic. Anyway,
the conspiracy theorist says, well, no, he was a hero. He wasn't. This is just the media being anti-hero.
Yeah.
Or anti-capes or something like that. And so they decide to resurrect him according to his instructions. And they make a mistake. But that's the end of the story. That's like the Brian Fawn last page thing.
Yeah.
But really, it was a good issue. And there was also some other character development among the Runaways in sort of the first half of it as well. And
so
they
turned things around then.
Yeah, well, it looks like they have the promise to turn things around. I mean, like the side plot with the guild members trying to resurrect Alex was really good. I still think there's a lot of damage been done to the original Runaways team. Like to me, they feel directionless. And I don't like, you know, Carolina going off to space to marry the Skrull and like all
that.
I
like that. It's interesting. Yeah.
Eh, fair, whatever. But they need to get if this device of trying to resurrect Alex is a force to bring focus to the team, to the Runaways team, then this could be a great arc. So
I will disagree with the art on one other thing. Who's the blonde guy with the smarmy kid with no powers? What's his name?
The stupid kid, whatever.
Yeah, the stupid kid.
Yeah.
What's he wearing here? He's got a sleeveless vest of some kind.
Let me open it up.
He comes down the stairs.
Oh my god, that's awful.
It's
like a blazer with the sleeves cut off, and he's
it's like a peak lapel, and like
He's got like a sleeveless t-shirt on under it.
I mean, if he was the front man in a band, it would kind of be okay, but only during a show.
No, that's just wrong.
No, like an LA glam rock band or something like that.
Well, what about what Ultron's kid is wearing?
I can kind of
No, look at that.
He's got the
open college shirt and the golf cap.
These kids are really cool, that's all.
This is just bizarre.
He's also got the one leg up pants.
But the thing is that it all balances out because the Wonder Man shirt.
Yep.
Just
those are the regular people. Yeah. And, you know, there's like the same joke, like they're all talking to each other and they all have completely disparate lives and they get along together online. Like the one guy is just a business guy, you know, works in cubicles, he plays at work. And there's the one fat kid who plays as, you know, the hottest chicks in the Marvel Universe. And, you know, the one girl who goes to Ren Fairs and the hacker kid. You know, it's the stereotypes of MMORPGs, I guess. But it's interesting and it works. It doesn't feel forced. And it was a fun issue.
Yeah, it was good.
I liked it.
Way to turn it around.
Neither of you read Fury from Marvel Knights?
I didn't even know it existed.
I didn't either.
It's a this is going to be one of
this is like why do we do a podcast like, I don't
know. Like, well, as long as one of us does, it's fine. This is going to be just
that's
like
why
that.
Why there's three of us,
right?
This is going to be just like that when we go off on a tangent and talk about cowboy books, but I'm not going to do it for very long.
Please.
Basically, it's Garth Ennis with pencils by Derek Robertson and inks by Jimmy Palmiotti. So the art is
I got that original Fury book they did like 4 years ago.
No, it's not that. It's called Fury Peacemaker. Basically, it's Nick Fury in his very beginning of his military career in Africa during World War II. And at the end of the last issue, his entire unit gets killed, and he meets like a German general who leaves him to die and walk around in the desert. And he comes in this issue. He comes upon this group of British sort of special.
Wait a minute! I did buy that book.
Yeah, you did. You told
I bought
me
issue
to buy
one.
It. Yeah, you missed two.
Oh, how about that?
Oh, not me for once.
Wow, I feel ashamed.
Connor, what are you drunk when you go to buy your books? I mean, I would like to go with you once to see what happens when you buy your books. And do you just like look on the shelves, or do you?
It was St. Patrick's week.
Right, and you're Irish.
You started on Wednesday.
Last Wednesday.
This issue was good. I'm getting on topic. I'm pushing through.
Yes, please.
It was really good, and it's just like it's one of his war comics. When he did war stories, they were great. Other things is because the art is so nice, they really went all out with really nice paper and everything. And then in the middle of it, here's my complaint: there is a preview. Squadron Supreme number
that's
one.
That was across every Marvel book.
Books.
And yeah.
Dead center in the middle of my book. What the hell is going on?
Yeah, I know.
That is awful, and I won't buy the book even if I wanted to, based on the fact that they annoyed me. I mean, because I'm like, what is this? And I was like, is my issue over? And I had to skip a few pages and get
the
there.
Art
like, oh,
changed.
No.
What? Yeah, no.
The art's actually really similar, and the coloring is really similar. So like, it wasn't entirely clear because the first shot is like
a military
guys.
Guy.
Yeah, military guys like in an underground bunker, which would have been perfect.
Nice.
And I was like, what a weird place to end the issue.
I feel stupid for missing that now.
I really recommend it. It's good and it's getting better because he meets a British military unit, and because Ennis is, I think he's Irish, he does their voices really, really well, and it's always fun to read that if you're into that kind of thing. That's pretty much it for my books.
Yeah, so it looks like it was or sounds like it was a pretty, decent mediocre week for comics, but
nothing exemplary, but nothing some good reads.
But big, a couple of non, comic book medium things going on this week in the world of comics, though. First off, Connor recently got his hands on and viewed the Ultimate Avengers DVD.
I did.
And, I'll introduce the other one as well.
Sorry.
And then this Friday, V for Vendetta opened, and Josh was the only one out of the three of us who actually saw it yet. So let's start with Avengers.
Ultimate Avengers is the first in Marvel's line of direct to DVD animation movies.
There's going to be more.
Yes, this summer there's going to be part Ultimate Avengers 2, and there's going to be a Iron Man, and I believe a possibly a Doctor Strange. So there's three more definitely for this year. Yeah,
Are they Ultimate based? I'm sorry, I'm just.
The Avengers definitely is. I don't know anything about the other ones. They just tease it in the DVD packaging.
Oh, right. But this wasn't Ultimate. This is like a mix of the two, right?
No, this is pretty much straight Ultimate.
But they don't use the term Ultimates. They don't use the term Avengers in Ultimate. Like that's what confused me from the get-go. Ultimate Avengers seems like they're a mix.
Well, because that's the name that's more widely known.
People know it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the. I mean, the books are the Ultimates, right?
Yes, it's basically a adaptation of the first story arc.
Okay.
And I really am pro this idea because I think that as good as the movies they've made have been, I really think you can't go do a straight adaptation of a comic book on the movie screen, but you can get pretty close in an animated DVD. And so I'm very for this whole strategy they've got going.
So you're pro Marvel Animation.
Pro Marvel Animation. That having been said.
The best DC one. I think the best DC adaptations that have ever been done have still been the Dinny Batman.
Right, I think
Paul
really,
Dinny.
You could get really close animation wise.
Just give a huge shout out.
Woo, Dinny! You gotta go watch his interview show.
I will watch it today.
It was hysterical. All right, sorry. Go on.
But I think if you really want to get a straight adaptation of the comics, animation is the best way to go.
Paul Dini. Sorry. All right, go on. Yeah. So that said, is it a good adaptation?
Well, it's good and it's bad. It's good because they really stuck closer to the series than I thought they would. It's well written. The story's really good. I watched it with somebody who doesn't read the books, and he really liked it. The animation is really
Connor's brother is the test subject for all things to non-comics.
The animation is really substandard.
Is it like G.I. Joe animation?
It's like 90s Hanna-Barbera.
Nelvana.
That whole period of time where we had like an X-Men cartoon and a Spider-Man cartoon and all those
and Wildcats and Savage Dragon on CBS. Yeah. I remember that. Yeah,
it's kind of like that.
They did Savage Dragon.
Yep. Yes. Yep. They did. And Wildcats.
So there are moments in it where the animation actually is really good, and a couple of sequences, action sequences that were really good. Like there's the fight with the Hulk was pretty cool, but just some of it is just it's so rudimentary.
It's all that outsourced to Korean animation houses, probably, right?
Yeah, and it's just it's like 15 years ago it would have been good animation, but we're way beyond this point now. And if you want to be serious about doing these movies, I know they want to make it cheap, and the whole point is to cheap and fast. But
yeah,
I mean, come on.
The whole point.
It is the whole point. Make them cheap and fast, and put
them
out.
You bought it, and a whole bunch of other people bought it, and I bet they don't have any impetus to spend any more money on animation.
Right, but there's no way of knowing that until you buy it.
Well, you could rent it, or you could put it on Netflix.
Nah, that's too much time.
We are in no way affiliated with Netflix.
But I mean, it was good. It was good enough where I'll buy the next one because I thought the story was really engaging.
See, they have no reason to make it better.
Yep. Well, no, but it was. I'm saying it was good enough to buy. Mm-hmm. The animation could have been better, and it was disappointing.
You think you'll watch it again, though?
Sure.
I'd like to borrow it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Nice.
Okay. Actually, can you rip it and make a copy for me and email it to me?
Hey, we don't do that.
Oh, no. BitTorrent? What? No. Anyway, okay.
But it was fun. It was. They kept in the fighting. It was bloody at points.
Yeah, I mean that's the thing that I heard. Like, because who's it? Is it targeted at us or is it targeted at like kids? Because I heard that there was blood, but not as much language, and that there was, you know, I don't know.
No, the language is toned down, but there's bloody, and I mean it's not overly bloody, but
there's
it's
no G.I. Joe magic lasers that
don't
do
anything.
No.
A lot of people die.
You know my favorite thing about G.I. Joe, which we did, Connor, we discussed this like years ago, right? Was it you? How in the G.I. Joe the movie when they were captured?
Oh, they had guns strapped.
Yeah, they had. They made a point of taking all their weapons and putting them in the cell. But like on the character designs, like Snake Eyes has like a gun, a knife, grenades. And, like every character had like some sort of weapon on their person. But because it was part of their like outfit, it didn't work.
Yeah, they took away their rifles. But they put them in a cage with their pistols and their grenades and their knives.
But like nobody, no, like we're just waiting for something. To go, hey, Lady J, you've got a handgun on your leg. Like,
yes.
And there goes everybody's ears.
But it was good. I mean, I think if you liked the comic, you probably would
was
like
it like G.I. Joe because G.I. Joe was all action.
No, it was a lot of
stopping to talk. It was
a lot of character
fight.
Development. There's a lot of stuff with Captain America having to adjust to the world. He goes to visit Bucky and his old girlfriend.
I'm tired of Captain America being old. Get over it.
And the
frozen
point where Hank Pym is a jerk and nobody likes him and.
You know, poor Hank Pym gets such a bad rap.
He's got short guy syndrome.
Tony's a womanizer, and there was a lot of character development.
Okay, if they could have done one thing to make it fantastic, what should they have done?
Upgrade the animation.
Not get Sam Jackson to do Nick Fury.
That would have put it over the top as the best cartoon ever.
Yeah. If they got Sam Jackson to do Nick Fury's voice,
well, that was my next question.
The animation would stayed the same.
It would have been much better.
Okay.
Wait.
And in a world where Sam Jackson will make snakes on a plane, you'd think that he could just do a little voiceover work.
So well,
he did lots of it in Grand Theft Auto.
True.
All right, yeah.
So he didn't do it.
No, he didn't.
No.
How was the voice acting, though? That was my next question.
It was good. They kept it. Usually in these cartoons, they don't keep accents. You know, like everybody's American.
Did Thor have a Scandinavian accent?
Scandinavian accent, by the way, is perfect American English.
Black Widow had a Russian accent, you know, Wasp sounded Asian. It was, you know, it all worked. Like the Aquaman, when Aquaman shows up in Justice League, he doesn't have an accent, even though he's supposed to have one in the comics. You know, like, that stuff they don't really do very well in the DC comics.
Does Aquaman supposed to sound like Merman from He-Man?
No, he sounds supposed to sound kind of Russian, actually.
He sounds like a, what are the things? The Murlocs.
Yeah.
He's supposed to sound sort of Russian. Yeah. Vaguely Russian. But
all right, so
voice
so,
acting was good. The writing was good. The story was good. The animation was really disappointing.
So thumbs up, thumbs down.
Thumbs up.
All right.
Mostly.
Thumbs mostly up.
V for Vendetta.
How much do you want me to say?
Good. Thumbs up, thumbs down. Should I go see it?
Yes.
Did you enjoy it?
Yes.
Is it this year's Sin City?
No.
Why?
It depends. Well, I mean, Sin City. It's funny because Sin City was made into a more cerebral movie than V for Vendetta was, which was more cerebral of a comic book.
It was dumbed down.
Well said.
It wasn't. It was dumbed down a little bit. I mean, I think that a lot of the. I was very surprised. It's, you know, if you read it, it's a very thought-provoking piece in its comic form. It's about governments and the people's place and involved in them. And these are not the kinds of things that I think would make a large movie, like a large weekend action box office, you know, draw movie.
Right.
But that being said, there were things that were changed that I think I don't really understand. And I can get into very specifics about it, but I don't think anybody wants me to ruin it for anybody yet, so I can do that on a later one. But I think that some of the original thrust of Alan Moore's points were lost in some of the changes. And I can understand why they made the changes, but I think it would have been just as effective otherwise.
Well, I've read they changed the focus from anarchy to democracy.
Well, they didn't. Yeah, I mean, they didn't really talk about anarchy in
the
same sense.
That's a big point in the book.
Yeah. His I mean, the point of the book is that anarchy is better than fascism. Uh-huh. And he's using anarchy to get to a better position. And basically, I mean, very, very as quickly as I can do it, in the book he says, you know, he blames everybody. This is your fault. You put them into office. You know, the Churchill quote, you know, people yep. get the government that they deserve in a democracy. And in that sense, it is the fault of
the people.
Of the people for living under the tyranny and for letting the people get to power in the first place and not doing anything about it. And that's why he's trying to get anarchy going. This one is more, I'm trying to bring down the corrupt government because of what they did to me. And
well, I think, but that was
there's a bit of that. In the
there's
book
a bit
too,
of that
though.
In the book. There's definitely a bit of that. In
it's
the
all.
Book.
It's no, it is. It's a personal revenge.
I'm just. It's a more. It's just a more intelligent argument in the book.
Yeah, well, but I get the feeling in the book a lot of it is masking his personal revenge from what they did to him.
And of. I think also you've got a lot more time to tell the whole thing, where in the movie you don't.
Yeah, it was a long movie, and I didn't feel like they were short of time.
No, but you know what I mean. You know, I mean,
I'm saying no, and they left things out, like the whole thing about there was no storyline about any of the government members and their personal crisis, like the one guy whose wife is trying to get in. That wasn't in there. And
yeah.
How great was the British leader,
John Hurt?
Yeah, I love him.
He's good. Although to me, like, it was a little too much. Like, he's just trying to be a straight Nazi. Like, they showed him doing speeches and stuff, and he was doing his Hitler routine.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
And it's not that – it's not – they're not Nazis. They're fascist. It's different.
Right.
You know, slightly anyway. It's more – it's not – it's more covert. It's not as big.
Was it the best of the Moore adaptions?
The word is adaptation.
I don't – it's adaptions.
It had to have been better than League.
No, it was. It was the best of them, I think. Yeah. I think one thing – on a very positive note, for the most part, I think V was done very well. The costume in direct defiance to all other comic book adaptation movies, the costume is exactly out of the book. I think instead of making it purplish, it was black. But like all the uniform, the mask, and the hat and everything are straight from the book. The thing that's most amazing is that the image of the mask, like, you think it'd be boring to watch a movie the whole time where you see the face of the protagonist as an unmoving face.
Yeah.
And it is such a good image because it's kind of smirking and it's smiling and you can tilt the head one way or tilt the head a little way and you can just get a little bit of emotion from it. And I don't know if that was because of, what's his name?
Hugo Weaving.
I just read about that, and he said that acting with the mask, he was specifically, you know, trying to move, you know, the right way.
He did really good job at that. I think the thing that has to come from Alan Moore and David Lloyd, and I would just say David Lloyd, but now I know how Alan Moore writes that Alan Moore had a lot to do with it. The design of that mask is genius because they didn't change a bit of it.
Yep.
I mean, it comes in 3D. It works just as well. And this is a story that is 20 years old at least. And the mask is dead on. Like, graphically, they nailed something there.
Well,
amazingly.
For $195, you can have a replica of it from DC Direct.
Well, You know, a couple of years ago, like 4 or 5 years ago, I wanted to be V for Halloween, and I couldn't find anything to do it. And then I was like, well, no one would have known who I was anyway. Now that I can do it, I can't. So,
do you think they does V come off as a hero or a terrorist?
He's a hero. Actually, what's real? I mean, I don't want to give the movie away to anybody, but basically the point of it is that he's blowing up stuff in London, and he blows up something at the end, and it's the moment of victory. And it's a striking image because, I mean, I could say, imagine if they made a movie right now where they blew the hell out of the Statue of Liberty in a huge scene and explosion, and it was the moment of victory and triumph at the end of the movie. That would be a pretty striking image.
Right.
And in that sense, they did that.
Is that the image from the comic?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But a lot of the mainstream press that I've read has been their whole, you know, like here's somebody who's basically a terrorist and they're you know making him out to be a hero when he really shouldn't be and then questioning whether he's a hero or
what
a
is a terrorist?
Well, yeah, that's a question. But the thing is, like in the book, you never really know if he's a hero or not either. You just know that he's doing. It's just interesting, you know. Because
I mean, that's the question. But these are the questions that we all need to be asking. Really? Yeah. I mean, yeah. What is a terrorist? The thing is, V doesn't kill. He doesn't kill civilians specifically. He killed police officers. I guess he killed anybody who was in those buildings, and I'd assume there's civilians in there. So, like, where do you draw the line? You know,
right.
Is it because he's English and they're English? You know, if he was an Arab fighting for it, how would people? You know, they'd say this was the worst movie ever made.
Yeah.
So. It depends on your point. It really is, but it's thought-provoking, and it's good. Yeah. I would just say that the movie's pretty good, especially if you've never read the book, but the book's a lot better, as in every case. But this is a source text I really, really love. I think it's brilliant. I think that it's one of the best graphic novels I've ever read. And I don't mind when you change a movie for the sake of making a movie. I had no problems with the way that Peter Jackson adapted Lord of the Rings. He made some changes because as long as you don't make changes to the characters, and I think that there was one character. I think the movie changed the character of Evie slightly. For example,
course.
And you'll learn this right at the beginning. The first thing in the book is that she's a prostitute.
Right.
And she's not a prostitute in this.
Right. Well, yeah. That's, how much of that is Natalie versus? Yeah.
Well. She's just in the movie. I mean, in the book, she's a stand-in for. She's a stand-in for the people
right.
who are scared and cowardly and timid and everything. And that's in the book. And in the movie, she's tougher than that. And I think that takes away from the point of the character.
Interesting.
But
right.
Very good, nice, very nice images. V was excellent. Like the character of V was really good.
Visually looks good and all that stuff.
Visually looked great. Stephen Ray as Inspector.
I love Stephen Ray.
Finch, awesome. Great casting. Stephen Ray's great.
He's very underrated.
Yeah. So worth seeing.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, definitely. So I hope I didn't give away too much or anything. But,
well, no, whatever. I mean,
but I think if you go into it completely unspoiled without having been in love with this book beforehand, you'll quite like it.
How did the audience like it?
Good. Yeah, pretty good. It was a packed house and everything. But it's funny because you look at this audience and I just look at all like these kids and stuff, and I just think they're not thinking about Islamofascism and all this stuff. But maybe this will.
Maybe this will stoke their curiosity. They'll go pick up the book. They'll read the book. Then they'll go pick up the books that are referenced in the appendix.
Wonder about like the mass audiences, how they're taken in a movie like this, because these themes and concepts are not. They're not, mass audience kind of things. They're much more deep than that. But they're done, with the skin of this action movie.
Right.
But him being a terrorist, the government in this is made to be so bad.
Over the top bad.
Yeah, more so than in the book. So that they're completely unforgivable.
It loses its power when it's like that, because then
it's
cartoonish. Then you're like, oh well, obviously they should be taken down.
I mean, he's playing Hitler when he's giving speeches, and troops are marching past him, and he's got the big black flag. Like,
yeah. they played it up heavy. So
they had to, though. I think they think they had to anyway, and I think that's what Alan Moore's upset about. Although the only complaint that I remember him talking about is there was a bit in the script where basically there's this thing where they make toast with eggs in it, and one guy calls it "eggy in a basket." And Alan Moore was just beside himself. He's like, no self-respecting Brit has ever called anything "eggy in a basket." That's an American making up a British term. And, like, it stood out. It's funny. Did either of you end up watching the little Alan Moore interview bit that I posted on the website from YouTube? Really, you need to watch it. He does this bit where he shows you his script for League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, and it's a huge block of text. And he goes over three of them and goes, okay, that's for the first page. And at the bottom, the only words are in the beginning. So the whole thing is – and like he reads a bit of it where he just talks. It's really good. You should watch it.
All right, we'll check it out. All right, well
– I think I've talked enough.
Yeah, I think so. All right, so we had a great week for the Frapper map, right, Connor?
We're at 93.
93, seven more to 100 people.
What do we do after 100?
We get a seat in the parliament. The podcast
we get a seat in the podcast parliament, and then we can affect change, so from within. All but right. Anyway,
jeez.
Maybe the 100th person will get a Dark Hawk number one.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah, we're still just so everyone knows we're still working on ideas for the Dark Hawk contest, and don't worry, those issues aren't going anywhere. So
they're
not going
safe.
Up in value either. It's not as if there's going to be a surge in the Dark Hawk market and Ron's going to change his mind. I can't afford to let him go.
You know, Jan Thomas in Baton Rouge agrees. He says Dark Hawk rules on the Frapper map. So you know,
they're coming out of the woodwork now.
In caps.
They really are. They really are. We had a bunch of people this week. We had Adam from New York, who just started listening, and he's telling us to check out Batman Year 100.
Which is Paul Pope, who was also recommended by Patrick Watson, who is a Mexican wrestler of
Ohio,
who says, buy everything, Paul Pope. And my favorite of the week, the Davis family from Grant, Alabama, who loved the podcast.
not so much love it, but they loved it once.
They loved. At one point...
For about 5 minutes.
Yeah.
once I loved the podcast. I loved the podcast once.
So, if you haven't represented yourself on the Frapper map, and we know that there are at least 400 of you who haven't, you can go to Frapper.
Way to give away our demographic.
You can go to frapper.com, frappr.com/ifanboy, and you can make yourself known.
Only seven more to 100. Let's get
please. Let's get, you know, it would be nice to get, you know, to 100 by March.
It's so going to stop at 99 for like 2 months.
Yeah, it's gonna be sad. But, and if you have any questions, unfortunately we babbled on about movies and so we didn't have time to take any of our listener mail. But if you have any questions or want to share your thoughts with us, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com.
We can come to the website and talk.
Yeah, as always, come to ifanboy.com and post on the different, you know, topics that were being discussed and let everybody know what you think.
The pick of the week threads are always interesting.
Yes.
If there's any stories that you think that we should put up on the web blog, anything we want to talk about, send them to us.
Yep.
Because that's how we roll.
Or if you want to talk to Ron about Nova.
Yeah, Nova and Darkheart. I really feel a groundswell of support coming for these Marvel C-list characters. Darkhawk, Nova, I think we can take enough of this X-Men, you know? We're tired. Enough of this Avengers. Ooh, Steve Rogers, you're old. Whatever. Nova's more interesting. So.
Oh, boy.
V for Vendetta has inspired me to revolt against the Marvel Universe.
Has it?
No, it hasn't. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, I know. He's always part of the Nova Corps, but still. It's, you know. What?
It's such a horribly blatant knockoff.